Hello, and welcome to How to Make a Memory, the show that explores the items we make for one another and how they impact our relationships. My name is Jen Tierney, and this week I'll be speaking with my brother and the composer of the show's theme music, Chuck Salamone. When it came time to think about the music for this show, I thought of Chuck right away. He's 5 years younger than I am, and as I was getting ready to graduate high school and head off to college, he was just starting to become the musician he is today. But even back then, his sound was filled with creativity and tenacity. We spoke briefly about the themes of the podcast and the sort of vibe I wanted. A few days later, he had sent me two great tracks, one that I use as the intro and outro. The second one is also gorgeous, and he'll talk a little bit about where that tune came from. Initially, I thought that Chuck would focus our conversation on how he writes and performs music, but I was pleasantly surprised when he began to talk about something far more profound, the act of making musicians.
Chuck, thank you so much for sitting down to talk to me. I'm super excited to get a chance to talk to you a little bit more seriously, directed, like in a more directed way about, you know, what you do and why you do what you do and all of the joy that it brings to your life, as I'm sure it does. Yeah, so why don't you start off by telling everybody a little bit about you and what you make.
Basically, my main medium is music. I've definitely tried to make other things in terms of art, but if we're going to say that I focus on making art, my main medium is music. And I would say branching off from music, if you want to get like real weird with the description, I work primarily during the day on creating musicians. So I run a small music school in the town that I've been living in for just about 5 years now. And me and my wife, Diane, we started a music school because we saw that we had a ton of students and we wanted to legitimize it. And I'm in the business of not just making music, but making musicians. It doesn't matter what age it is. We just focus on making people the best that they can be musically, and we focus on helping them express themselves in such a strange time to be alive.
That's a really, really beautiful way of putting it, because and a different approach to the conversation than I guess I was expecting. I like that it's this idea of helping a person to become something bigger and more complete.
It's been a really rewarding journey so far. You know, like I get to do this every single day of my life, and I don't feel like it's work. Some days I wake up and I feel guilty that I get to have so much fun and also make a living doing it.
Yeah, I think that you've touched on the goal for so many people who create art or create, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that parents dread their kids saying, I want to be an artist, you know, because are you ever going to make money doing it? Are you ever going to be happy if the thing that you love isn't going to make you any money, et cetera? And I think that, you know, if you can kind of make it work for yourself, really, through, you know, dedication and time, and it's nice to hear, you know, specifically because I'm part of your family, I think it's nice to hear that you've found that specific reality for yourself of, I'm so happy with what I do, and I wake up and I feel privileged and lucky. That's wonderful.
It's so weird to sometimes to see my students and be teleported back in a sense. To be teleported back to when I was young and learning. I didn't really take formal lessons. I know that when I go into a house, my main goal is to not only inspire all the people that could possibly be like a canvas, like a good candidate for a student, but I want to inspire the family to feel really good about me coming in. So Diane and I are... company name is called His and Hers Music, and the tagline is Music Where the Heart Is, because we operate solely out of people's homes. So we travel in the event that our students don't come to our little apartment in Nutley. Every time I go into a student's house, it's like I'm going home, but like it's just not where I live. And there are aspects of people's families and details of some of these families that normally a guitar teacher wouldn't know about, and normally a guitar teacher wouldn't even care about. But, you know, I feel like the type of person that I've become and the type of person that I was raised to be is someone who's just interested in people. And I feel like everybody has a soundtrack that is waiting to be written, or at least waiting to be discovered. But I see these kids and I think to myself, I'm really glad that I get to be not just kids, like adults too. I'm really glad that I get to be this type of person, this type of teacher. Today I was in Guitar Center and I went and I got this really awesome mic and I'm getting rung up and I hear this, I hear in the distance of Guitar Center. Now, like, Guitar Centers are notoriously big, but they're also notoriously loud, and someone's playing Iron Man, and someone's playing Sunshine of Your Love, and someone's playing a really bad rendition of The Trooper, and someone's playing scales, and it's just like this chaotic, cacophonous space. But I hear this little thing. I want to try and mimic it. It sounds so weird, but like I heard this little beep, just this beep, this little thing that I recognized on a bass guitar. And I literally looked at my buddy who still works there, and I was like, I have to go see who that was. And sure enough, it was one of my students who I've been teaching for like 5 years. And I walked up behind him and I put my hands on his shoulders. His dad saw me coming and like didn't say anything. He was like, oh, and I was like, you can't hide from me. I know it's you. And he's like, oh, dude, what's going on? And it's just like, I've known this kid for so long, and it's so weird to see like a person who is just getting started musically. Like, he's just going into high school, but I've seen all of his eras of music. He's representative of every single thing that I wish for all of my students, whether it's kids or adults. And it's to find your independence through music. Everybody has their own story to tell through their musicianship. And it's kind of like when you hear a specific singer, like that's a little bit more upfront, but like if you listen to Yo-Yo Ma play cello, you know it's Yo-Yo Ma. It's unmistakable. If you can tell like who your friend is when they're just playing guitar or when they're playing piano or bass, that's such a deep human connection that goes beyond any verbal-based language. It's just incredible. It was just an incredible moment. That happened before I had like 2 or 3 lessons today, and it just put me in such a good zone. You know, I went and I taught my few lessons after that, and just that little thing happening in Guitar Center, which was like maybe a 2-minute interaction, was enough to fuel me to be exercising at maximum teacher level. I just got everything that I wanted out of today's workday specifically. And I feel like if I say that often, I'm winning against the idea that musicians can't make money. Musicians can't make a living. Musicians inevitably become starving artists. It's one of the most rewarding things in the world. Like, you get to communicate on a nonverbal level with people. Painters do it. Musicians do it. Dancers do it. We're living in such an artistic time, and yet people still, they don't see it. I feel like everybody's vision is obscured a little bit, and everybody's ears are deaf to what is going on, obviously politically, worldwide. But, you know, I'm actually really excited for like the Great American Protest Song to make a comeback. and for like Bob Dylan to release like a sick protest record that is just like so insanely beautiful and great.
There have been a couple good protest songs that I've heard in the last 2 or 3 years. They're around. I mean, what's your protest song gonna sound like?
I mean, my idea of, I think of one protest song. Well, there are a few actually, and they're really one is a little bit more personal for you and I, but I really love the times they are a-changin'. A really great, drawn-out, ridiculous protest song, if no one has heard it, traditionally in our household growing up, was Alice's Restaurant. And that's just the greatest, that's the greatest protest song ever written. It's like, have you ever noticed live at the end that the most meta thing happens? He has monotonously dragged on in this song for so long that everybody in the audience knows the chorus.
Yes.
And he doesn't even have to try when he asks everybody to sing at the end. And that's representative of the time. At the end, we can all come together and do this one thing, and that's sing this stupid song. And the stupid song is representative of, I feel like it's representative of the plight of the people. You know, it's representative of the people saying no. We don't want to fight in this war anymore, and we don't think that it's representative of who we are. And I just always found that song to be creative.
I still come back to it every year. Even, I mean, we don't always get to spend Thanksgiving together every year, but I always, I mean, at noon on Thanksgiving Day, I stop what I'm doing and go and, you know, find a quiet place and sit and listen to it. And it could be anything, but it's that song really captures being a child in our home and that time. I think it's very transportive. And the song itself is from a time that you know, our father and mother remember, and they're transported to a different time. And so it's beautiful how you know, one piece of art can transport people who are in the same place and time to two different places and times. Like, it's just incredible.
It's a ridiculous vessel. I discuss this with my students. There are times, like, when you're practicing music, when you have to imagine that you're playing with the whole band and be considerate of the whole band, but it's just you in a room. And I call it being willfully schizophrenic. You have to be able to hear things and experience things so vividly. I just try and get people to understand the severity of putting yourself into a position of vulnerability musically, so that you actually open yourself up to all possible experiences musically. And how that connects with Alice's Restaurant is, if you go and listen to it and it's not Thanksgiving, I guarantee you that your brain has only associated that with Thanksgiving Day. And you'll smell like turkey, and there won't be a turkey cooking in your house at all. And it's like, that's just how the brain works, because music is so insanely complex. And the more musical you become and the more you understand about music in general, the more your brain sort of seems to light up. It's incredible.
What was it like for you when you sat down to record the music for the show? I remember that you had talked to me a little bit about that process, which was, you know, relatively quick for you. And I thought it was really interesting. I thought you might want to talk about that a little.
I had actually thought about this. This is something that happens to me a lot. When I write music, I'm like a horse running with blinders on. I know where my goal is, but I don't actually see what's happening in the periphery. When I get really focused on a song, I just start writing it. This has happened with almost every single song that I have written since I started formally writing music when I was like 13 or 14 years old. And the music that I wrote then was nowhere near what it is now. That doesn't mean that I haven't experienced the same thing time and time again. Basically, what happens in detail is I say I want to write a song, and I just start playing a chord progression. And I get it to a place where I really, really like how it's making me feel. So I'm emotionally connected to the song first and foremost. I don't write lyrics before I write music. So many people who I've revealed this to and shared that tidbit of information with are like, well, how do you know what to write about? And it's like, well, I think about music as, you know, like the song itself is saying something, but then you have to find the words to pair with that emotion. And a lot of times the same thing happens when I write lyrics. I'll write lyrics about something, like I'll have a goal, And I'll look at the lyrics when I'm done, or I'll be listening to a song that I recorded. Most recently, my band, we recorded an EP, and I've listened to the EP like a lot and through all of the stages of its development. And I've got a chance to really like listen to my own lyrics and how I've delivered them. Because most of the time you're not even thinking. You go into the studio, you sing the words, you make sure that it's on point and that all the pitches are correct and the feeling's there. You don't even really have time to think about the words because you're moving. You paid for this time. You have to move. There's no time to sit and pontificate about your own lyrics. But that's why I like listening to music when I drive in a car, because you're stuck with it. Traffic has never been so exciting because you can listen to music. You can just be there and listen to music. People like hate traffic. I hate traffic because I'm just impatient. But I like music in general when I'm driving, no matter what the speed. And I'm listening to my own song in traffic or driving, you know, wherever I'm going to. And I'll have this moment when I'm like, oh, that's what happened to me. Like, oh, that's what I was going through when I wrote this song. That literally happened with writing the outro music for your podcast. I was listening to it and it started to like solidify. It's like, it starts like jello, you know, like you make it and then you let it sit for a bit and then it starts to solidify. And I'm sitting there listening to it and I'm listening to my performance of it. And I'm thinking to myself, where did this come from? And I know that I had said to you on the phone that it sounded like I was trying to channel Elliot Smith. And that may be true, but the reality of the situation is that my wife was on vacation and I was completely alone. And that accidentally came through in the music. I didn't mean for it to happen. I just wrote it. I was alone in my bathroom, and I remember it was like 6 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock, and it was just starting to get dark. I hadn't turned any lights on in the house. It was just like kind of a little bit dimmer in the house, and the sun was kind of creeping through the blinds of my oddly placed bathroom window, the type of window that they put inside your shower. It's like the most ridiculous. Put the window somewhere else. God. And I just played this song and then hummed a melody line and then harmonized with what felt right for that melody line and listened to it and realized that I was not only channeling Elliot Smith, but maybe channeling a little bit of Becca Stevens vocally. And, you know, the chord progression and the vibe was maybe like a little bit slower version of how Claudio Sanchez of Coheed and Cambria would play a rhythm line. Just like all of these different influences mixed into one moment that became me. And I didn't even realize that it was actually me. I just thought that I was playing. And then you listen to it and you're like, oh, that is actually who I am. Like, that's the deepest part of me that I'm sharing, and my loneliness with my wife being away. And like, she was going to Disney World. How can you be upset at your spouse for going to Disney World? You can't. It's not possible. They're going to have the best time. She went with her dad. It was so awesome. They had a great trip. And I just decided to stay home because I had a bunch of stuff to take care of with getting like a rock intensive program ready. And I had a bunch of students to teach. And, you know, I felt like I had to sit that one out. And it wasn't that I was lonely. It's just that I was alone. And that song is representative of me being alone with my thoughts. And I don't know. It's just like, I listen to it sometimes like on my phone and I'm just like, oh.
It kind of revealed a little something about yourself.
To myself. Yeah. You know, cause I write, as you know, I write all sorts of music. Like I have all these different personas that I access for music. I think one of my one of my favorite artists that actually does that in a more chaotic fashion is Frank Zappa. And Frank Zappa does what he wants when he wants it, says what he wants when he wants to, portrays whatever emotion, whatever character, it doesn't matter. He's Frank Zappa, he's going to do it. And I feel like if everybody just tried to live under the concept of, like, the best control for you sometimes is to lose control and just exist musically, like, just start making music and don't worry about what it sounds like and find the meaning in it later, I think more people would realize how musical they are. Everybody has some musicianship within them. To me, it's the most profound thing. Like, why aren't more people getting together and creating music as communities? Like, why doesn't my town have a community band? And if they do, why haven't I heard about it?
Well, I mean, it sounds like that's the next thing you're going to make.
Right now, Diane and I are talking about doing an Americana folk group.
Sure.
Sort of like, because every time we go to, I'm plugging Disney left and right tonight. I'm like on. Disney, every time we go to Disney World and we go to Epcot, we see the Voices of Liberty and we're always just so inspired. We're like, why don't we do this? Because it's not difficult and it's not like it's an unrealistic idea. And it's not taking away from anybody else's idea. Like, you're preserving this genre of music and this time period of music. It's like, oh, well, we want to start a rock band, but we want to be a psychedelic rock band that sound like we're right out of the 70s, but it's 2017, you know? And then there are some people that, like, want to start a band where it's like, we're from space, we're space demons from space, and we're from the future, but we took a wormhole and we ended up on Earth. Like, it's not unheard of. Like, if you haven't heard of a band called Guar, that's the premise of Guar. Or if you want something a little bit more tasteful, you can listen to an artist named Janelle Monáe, who literally her shtick is, I am Janelle Monáe and I am the embodiment of a spirit called Cindy Mayweather, who is the arch-android and the savior of, like, the android race in the distant, distant future. But I've come back in time to share my story with you people so that my story can already be known by the time it happens. And it's like, what? Like, it's really, like, talk about communities. Talk about people that listen to her and are diehard fans. There's always so much. There's if you're not into music after this podcast, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you might have to go see a doctor.
So the first episode that I recorded was with a friend of mine named Aaliyah, who specifically spoke about how food is this thing that ties us together. And I think that that's one of the things that is going to come up in a lot of different conversations that I have as part of this podcast is when you make something, a lot of the times the reason why it's powerful and why it's meaningful to you is because of its universal qualities of how it can bring people together and make people feel things that they don't otherwise feel or can transport them to another place in another time. And yeah, I think that music, just like food, really, really gets right in there.
I don't know. I've always connected with you and Joe on music. I specifically remember a time when we were kids. We were like little. And it was hot at the house on Mountain Road. It was a hot summer day. And you had brought your boombox out to our front doorstep. This was such a creative idea. You had assigned Joe and I songs that were representative of our personalities. And I literally give that assignment to my students. I'm like, I want you this week to find me a song that is important in your life right now and that is representative of your personality, and I want you to text it to me. So I get text messages all the time like, this is me this week, instead of just one assignment. It's like, this is me today. This is me just now. And it's like, I listen to the music and I'm like, what's going on? Is everything okay? I'm like, that's awesome. This is great. This is really cool. Like, what happened today? Like, how are you doing? Tell me about it. Music has a way of doing that too. people want to share. That's like a fact of life. It's so interesting to be a musician right now. I've never seen things so fractured. What happens, Jen, on the 4th of July? Everybody gets together. It doesn't matter who you are. You watch fireworks, and what happens? Someone is blasting on an awful, like, little boombox or, like, their cell phone speaker the song about being proud to be an American, where at least you know you're free, which is a song that was written in our lifetime. It's like that post-9/11 feel-good jam when Americans needed to come together to just be American and suffer through that tragedy together. And that song, which is so triumphant and so happy, to me, it's like hearing the saddest song in the world, because I only think about the time just before it was written and recorded. And music itself, if music has the ability to literally transfix people on one single idea, then why aren't people coming together and writing music to rise above what is making us rip each other apart? If your friend Aaliyah says that food can bring people to a table to talk to each other and share a meal and share like a literally a life-giving and nourishing meal, then why can't everybody go to a concert and experience the same nourishment on a deep human experience / even spiritual level and be fed that way and be fed this idea, this concept of we need to stop fighting each other. Think about this. Bach, like Johann Sebastian Bach, was not nearly as famous when he was alive. It only took an entire generation to pass before Felix Mendelssohn discovered his manuscripts. And then they were released to the public. And people started losing their minds because Bach's music was so profound and so intense. And now children and people learning piano, like, they open up the Well-Tempered Clavier and they start from the beginning. And they start on the music that was literally written to be played by a child. And they finish the book. If they can, with masterful playing skill. It's unbelievable what a person's past actions, productions, art can do for them in the end. And the reality is that as long as reality exists, there is no end. It's just, if you create something and it's out there, there's always a possibility that it will be discovered. And I think that's what everyone really wants, is they just want to share. You know, that's exactly what your podcast is about. They just want to share.
Chuck is such a fun guy to talk with. Our chats always remind me that he is compassionate and dedicated to the things and people he loves. And now I'd like to tell you about something I made this week. Since this episode had a musical theme, it was a happy coincidence that I found myself making some music a few days ago. My mother-in-law has a retirement party for a colleague coming up this week, and she requested my help with a musical spoof. She gave me some lyrics that had been written to the tune of Wake Me Up When September Ends, and I sat down with a karaoke track and recorded them for her. It was a fun, quick little project that I know will make her and her coworkers smile this week. I love that my family and friends think of me for projects like this one. That brings us to the end of this week's episode. A special thanks to Chuck for joining me and for creating our theme music. Our logo design is by Becky Carpenter. We get system admin support from Greg Thole. Join me next time when I sit down with Rebecca to learn all about her business as a newborn baby photographer. Now, go make something for someone you love.